Okay, so who were Shifra and Pua?
Who was the
advice? How famous are they?
Did you know their names
before I mentioned their names or before this week? Are they as famous as Joseph or Daniel? Are they as heroic? I think the answer to the first question is no. They're not as famous as Joseph and Daniel, but they're as heroic. So Joseph and Daniel, you could say they're heroes of our faith, strictly speaking, the Jewish faith upon which our faith is built. I've got a couple of books at the back called Heroes of Our Faith. There's a volume 1 and a volume 2. And they follow the same pattern, their daily devotionals. A verse of scripture and then the story of a Christian or a group of Christians who lost their life for the cause of Christ, and then a hymn or a prayer or a poem. They're not always easy to read, so maybe to help you pitch. My mum couldn't manage, she's older than me. She couldn't manage because she's a feeler, but our 11-year-old daughter can manage because she's a feeler, but she's able to read without feeling it to the point where she can't function. But as hard as some of those stories are, they're encouraging because what they show us is that persecution isn't new. They show us that persecution of Christians has always happened. Who was the first Christian to be persecuted? So it's an interesting question. You can give different answers. Who was the first Christian to be martyred?
Jesus.
We often think about Stephen, but it was Jesus, because anybody who's lost their life for the cause of Christ is following in Jesus' footsteps. And lots of what I've said so far is about suffering. And let me just very briefly put persecution in the context of suffering. If we had longer, I'd say speak in pairs. What's the difference between the two? And I want you to imagine my things have been in different bags because of, you know, airlines. And imagine I've got a globe. And while God holds the world in his hands, and he hasn't dropped the world, if I were to drop this globe, it might help you to understand that the world in which we live is fragile and fallen. It's a fallen world. So suffering happens to everyone. You don't have to be Christian to suffer. One of you prayed it earlier about people suffering locally. I've also got a book at the back of The Mystery of Suffering. It is a mystery. And Francis, you started by saying, as we share in the sufferings of Christ, we also share in the victory of Christ. I was 50 last year, and I suppose as I'm getting older, I see a bit more suffering. Everybody suffers. We suffer in the world because it's a fallen world. But Christians are called to suffer in 3 additional ways. And you see some of them in this passage. The second way in which we're called to suffer is for the world, in the same way that Jesus had compassion on the world. It goes beyond pity and empathy. It's putting ourselves alongside somebody and being with them in their suffering. We suffer in the world because everybody does. Christians are called to suffer with the world, and we're also called to suffer for the world. We're called to suffer for the world. Imagine, Francis, I'll use you again. Francis and I have the same health condition. You have the medicine. I don't have the medicine. There's nowhere else to get the medicine. And Francis chooses to give me the medicine, knowing that giving me the medicine means there's none for him. Francis is suffering for me. I'm not suffering. He, in my place, is suffering. In the world, with the world, for the world. And then the fourth one is probably the ugliest one to think about. Christians are called to suffer at the hands of the world, by the world. That's what persecution is. Persecution is intentional suffering that requires somebody to cause it. And it's part of being a Christian. It doesn't make it easy, nor does it make it acceptable. Persecution is inevitable, but its inevitability doesn't make it acceptable. It's going to happen. Paul promised Timothy, let me say this to encourage you, Paul promised Timothy that everyone who will be persecuted. It's 2 Timothy 3 verse 12. He said, everyone not who lives a godly life. What he actually said was, and this is the encouraging bit, we don't have to live a godly life to be persecuted. We have to simply have the desire to live a godly life. I think this was one of the people who prayed about us sinning. And that's good to confess. Even when we desire to live a godly life, we don't always do it. But it's that desire that means in the spiritual, we will be persecuted. It's part of being a Christian. And it's not new. It's not only Christians who are persecuted, but that's what we do when we help Christians who are persecuted. And we made that change a couple of years ago, again during COVID. If we could help Christians, up until then we always asked this, are these Christians suffering because they're being persecuted? Which usually meant they were in a minority. Not always, but usually. But then we decided if we could and where we could, as means allow, we'll help Christians who are suffering more generally. Which is kind of just a widening. We've not lost our focus. Still, the majority of what we do is Christians who are persecuted. And the reason I've chosen Exodus chapter 1 is because it gives a good framework.
Just to turn it on the side.
Okay. It gives a framework because within the one passage of scripture, there are a number of different stories of persecution, a number of different types of persecution within this one passage. So in the church Bible, what does the heading say for Exodus 1? The Israelites oppressed. So the title, this is very wordy, and if words don't help you, ignore this title. Persecution, the progression of oppression. Now, in medicine, we talk about, we don't always speak very patient, in very patient-friendly terms. When we say a test is positive, it's not positive for the patient. And we also talk about the progression of a disease. When we talk about the progression of a disease, what we mean, it's not progress for the patient, but what we mean is, this is what is going to happen unless what?
Intervention.
Intervention. We're going to come back to intervention in 10 minutes time. Okay. So bear with me for 10 minutes. This is what's going to happen. But strictly speaking, you know, who wrote the Pilgrim's Progress? John Bunyan. Who wrote the Pilgrim's Regress? The opposite, that was C.S. Lewis. But regress is the opposite of progress. It's a process, but rather than getting better, it's getting worse. And that's what we see in Exodus 1. The process is one that gets worse. It starts off at oppression. Have a look, if you're reading, and I won't read it out now, but the final verse is worse than oppression. It's gruesome, graphic, violent. It's gruesome, graphic violence. Murderous, gruesome, graphic, specific, targeted violence. What's the difference between a victim and a target? Yeah, targeting is intentional. Well, both are intentional, but we can randomly be a victim. I could randomly be a victim of a hit and run or a robbery. But targeting is specific. This person, because they wear a fancy watch, maybe it's a wrong example to use, you could say they're a target because of that. But Christians, because of being Christians, are targets. We should expect persecution. If I get in a boxing ring, I should expect it. I'm a target. If I'm walking down the street, I don't need to expect it. Christians should expect it. Now, what do we do about that? We can do lots of different things about that. Let's see what happened here. So we've answered that question already. This is the first type of persecution. But before we get to ruthlessness, there's a word that's in the passage before. I think it's verse 10. Have a look. It's not ruthlessness. Pharaoh says, he uses an adverb, we must deal shrewdly. So let me ask this question before we go on to these slides. Is there a difference between shrewdness and ruthlessness? Shrewd is calculated. So can ruthlessness be calculated. So is there a difference? Let me help you. Yes, there's a difference. What's the difference? Okay, and let me ask this question, is shrewdness wrong? Before you answer, Jesus said, and if you're an animal lover, you'll love this verse, he mentions four different animals in one verse. I'm sending you out like sheep among wolves, therefore be as shrewd as snakes, or wise as serpents, whichever one you prefer, and as innocent as those. Pray for persecuted Christians that they will be both shrewd and innocent. Innocent so that no one can point the finger, but shrewd to prevent people pointing the finger. If you're a parent, I would suggest it's good to be shrewd. If you're a church treasurer, I'd suggest it's good to be shrewd. If you are a business person, be shrewd. Jesus commanded it, therefore it cannot be wrong. He commanded his followers to be shrewd. So, I'm going to use Francis and Ina because I can. I'm going to do a business deal with Ina. I've got something, and I'm going to sell it to Ina in such a way, for such a price, that it's good for me, but I have to recognise that it has to be good for her, otherwise why would she enter into this agreement or partnership? That's shrewdness. Good for me, good for her, we go and hopefully make it good for other people. Here's ruthlessness. I'm going to get what I want. Francis has it, I'm going to take it from him, and I do not care what it does to Francis. I do not care what it does to his family, what it does to his community. I'm going to get it. That's ruthlessness. That's why ruthlessness is wrong. Because it's a... Well, ruthlessness, the clue's in the word. Ruthlessness is a lack of... It's in the word. Ruth. If there's an old English word, our youngest child is called Ruth, and when she was learning to read, she said, "Show me, Daddy, where my name is big," because her siblings have Christian names, but none of them have the name of the book of the Bible. Show me where it's big. Ruthlessness is a lack of ruth. It's an old English word that means mercy or pity. And if you know the story of Ruth, it fits. And if you don't know the story of Ruth, read it in half an hour this afternoon. It's an encouraging story. Sorry, ruthlessness. The Egyptians worked the Israelites ruthlessly. They made their lives bitter with hard labour. They made their lives bitter with hard labour in brick and mortar and with all kinds of work in the fields. They were treated ruthlessly, it's wrong. Many Christians are treated ruthlessly. Christians in Pakistan are treated ruthlessly. Although there's a protection within the constitution of the nation, they're second-class citizens. I would go so far as to say many other places also where Christians are in a minority, in a Muslim majority context, they're treated ruthlessly. Think about Christians in Nigeria, certain parts of Nigeria, in the Middle Belt and in the North. Their lives matter less in the eyes of those who are in authority. That's the first step. I've called it step one. The second, and it might feel more like a leap than a step, midwife, we're coming to your question. Hidden murder. Okay, this was a specific command that Pharaoh gave to who? To the midwives, to do something in secret, specific and secret. These people in this profession, this is what you are to do on the delivery stool. If it's a boy, kill him. If it's a girl, let her live. Now, there's no wrong answer to this question. What does it bring to mind? You can say nothing.
Abortion.
Abortion. It brings even to my mind sex, selective abortion. Female people, female fetuses are more likely around the world to be aborted than male. But here, it's the opposite. It's the males. Now, many of our projects help girls and help women because in the context in which they are, they're not given the opportunities. God gives value to everyone, but if they, in that context, are not given, we will help girls to get an education. We will help women to get training. But I don't think, in the spiritual, it has changed. If I think about the church I grew up in, not dissimilar in size to this, the boys left church before the girls left church, the teenagers, if I think about the people in the youth group I grew up with, and in greater numbers. And I don't think it's just militarily, So I don't think this is just about killing the future soldiers. I think there's something spiritual here happening as well. And that might help you to think what else it might bring to mind, something that happened at the beginning of the New Testament. It's Herod and the infants, the slaughter of the infants. We don't often focus on it at Christmas. You can understand why. But what Herod tried to do, Pharaoh had tried to do earlier. This was an unsuccessful attempt, so you know the ending. Okay. You know the ending. Hidden murder. Specific instruction to specific people to do something in secret. The protection of life can cause the fear of God to come above obeying human authority. Christians are law-abiding people. Christians are good for their nation because we honour the law. The reason we honour the law is because human authority is delegated from divine authority. And therefore we honour the law. Now that, at times, is very difficult to do. Even here, locally, closer to home, it can be hard to do. But we are permitted to disobey the law of the land when and only when it's in direct contravention to God's law. And that was the case here. So these midwives were obeying. Well, let me ask this. Did they tell the truth or was it a lie? That's a question for the midwife, but you can have her. You can all answer. Did they tell the truth? Because what they said was this. Hebrew women are not like Egyptian women. They are much more vigorous and give birth before we arrive. Now, I'm not an obstetrician. I don't know of any anatomical reason why that would be true. Even if it was true, even if there was an element of truth in what the midwife said, it wasn't the reason they let the boys live. Did God honour them? Now, he honoured them even though they, in inverted commas, told a lie. What I mean by that is this. We have to bear witness to the truth. And we were singing it earlier. The truth is a person. And in bearing witness to the truth, there can be permission. And there needs to be permission. If you're in a context where someone is out to get you, you don't tell them where you're hiding. Otherwise they'll find you. Pray for Christians that they will be shrewd, especially in this context, when they're persecuted. And they have to work out, how do I honour the authorities in this land at the same time and in the context of honouring God's authority? How do I do that? Pray that they will be shrewd. Whether to speak, when to speak, with whom to speak, and what to say. This is the final verse in chapter 1. It's not very encouraging, so I won't leave us here. Every boy that is born, throw into the Nile, but let every girl live. This is no longer a specific instruction given to specific people to do something in secret. This is now a command to who? Everyone, find a baby boy and throw him in the river. Find the baby boy and throw him in the river. Everyone, do it. We won't prosecute you for it. In fact, I'm telling you to do it. Some Christians are in that kind of context where it seems that they'll be persecuted and killed without any mercy, without the authorities taking it seriously. What happened next? I've got 2 minutes left. What happened next? Now, after Exodus 1 comes Exodus 2. After Exodus 1 comes Exodus 2. And in Exodus 2 we have the birth of Moses. Moses, helpless Hebrew baby boy. He wasn't thrown in the river. He was placed in the river. Why was he placed in the river? He was placed in the river because the very river which should have drowned him was the river that would save him. We might ask God, and he's okay with these kinds of questions, and the question earlier about which project to help. He's okay with our questions, whatever they may be. Why do you allow suffering? Specifically, why do you allow persecution? Why does it have to be that way? God's okay with it because Jesus' son asked that kind of question in the Garden of Gethsemane. God can deliver from, and he does deliver from, and any time we try and report that as well, ask me a story later. There's not time to tell you now. But very, very often, God chooses to deliver through. He chooses to deliver through, which means this, that our salvation comes by going through whatever the suffering is, whatever the persecution is. This is the last one. Whatever you're going through, I don't know what you're going through in this church, congregation, in your homes. I do not know. I know that God knows what you're going through. He's not oblivious. And I know that he's not passive. He doesn't sit or turn his back or just watch and see what happens. It's a word that I used earlier. God is informed because he knows. God is involved. And because of his information and because of his involvement, he intervenes. And the biggest intervention in history is Jesus' intervention on the cross. It changed history. When we are persecuted, when we endure the persecution, we are going through what Jesus went through. He suffered on the cross. He was persecuted on the cross. It was intentional. People chose to do it. But it was part of God's plan. Part of God's plan. Moses is a type of Christ. He points us, we look at Moses and we see helpless Hebrew baby boy placed into a river, born in a context of persecution and suffering. God used that helpless Hebrew baby boy to save the people. And Jesus came as a helpless Hebrew baby boy and survived the persecution of the Herod by going to Egypt. And just in case you think that God doesn't like certain nations, where did Jesus go? I've just given you the answer. When he was being persecuted, he went to Egypt, the redemption of the nation. The nation that tried to kill the people group from which Jesus would come was the nation that Jesus was taken to for safety and refuge. God has a heart for every nation on this earth because he made them and they'll all be represented in heaven. And the only reason I'm emotional about it is thinking how I like having this. Morning has been with people from all of them. But we'll be people who've gone through whatever God calls us to go through. So look forward to that day. Don't give up the faith. Keep it and pass it on in the strength God gives you.